ಇವತ್ತಿನ ದಿನ ಶ್ರೀ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ವಿವೇಕಾನಂದರ ಬಗ್ಗೆ ಅವರ ಚಿಂತನೆಗಳನ್ನು ಹಂಚಿಕೊಳ್ಳಲಿಕ್ಕೆ ಬಂದಿದ್ದಾರೆ ಸಿಂಧು ರವೀಂದ್ರ ಅಂತ. ಶಿ ಈಸ್ ಎ ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟೆಡ್ ಹರ್ ಗ್ರ್ಯಾಜುಯೇಷನ್ ಇನ್ ಬಿಇ ಇನ್ ಎಲೆಕ್ಟ್ರಿಕಲ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಎಲೆಕ್ಟ್ರಾನಿಕ್ ಇಂಜಿನಿಯರಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಸಿದ್ಧಗಂಗಾ ಇನ್ಸ್ಟಿಟ್ಯೂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಟೆಕ್ನಾಲಜಿ ಇನ್ ತುಮಕೂರು. ಶಿ ದೆನ್ ಪ್ರೊಸೀಡೆಡ್ ಟು ವರ್ಕ್ ಇನ್ ಎ ಡಾಟಾ ಸೈನ್ಸಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಬಿಸ್ನೆಸಸ್ ಅನಾಲಿಟಿಕ್ಸ್ ಫೀಲ್ಡ್ ಫಾರ್ 5 ಇಯರ್ಸ್. ಡ್ರಿವನ್ ಬೈ ಹರ್ ಕೀನ್ ಇಂಟ್ರೆಸ್ಟ್ ಇನ್ ವೇದಾಂತ ಥ್ರೂ ಹರ್ ಗ್ರೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಇಯರ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದ ಪವರ್ ಆಫ್ ಯೋಗ ಟು ಇಂಪ್ಯಾಕ್ಟ್ ಫಿಸಿಕಲ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಮೆಂಟಲ್ ಹೆಲ್ತ್, ಶಿ ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟೆಡ್ ಹರ್ ಮಾಸ್ಟರ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ಯೋಗ ಥೆರಪಿ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಸೆಂಟರ್ ಫಾರ್ ಇಂಟರ್ಗೇಟಿವ್ ಮೆಡಿಸಿನ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ರಿಸರ್ಚ್, ಮಣಿಪಾಲ್ ಅಕಾಡೆಮಿ ಹೈಟೆಕ್ ಎಜುಕೇಷನ್. ಶಿ ನೌ ವರ್ಕ್ಸ್ ವಿತ್ ಎ US ಬೇಸ್ಡ್ ಯೋಗ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟಪ್ ಟು ಆಪರೇಷನಲೈಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಡಿಸೆಮಿನೇಟ್ ದ ಯೋಗಿಕ್ ಟೀಚಿಂಗ್ ಆಫ್ ಇಂಡಿಯಾ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಸರ್ವ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಸ್ ಎ ಸಬ್ಜೆಕ್ಟ್ ಮ್ಯಾಟರ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪರ್ಟ್ ದೇರ್. ಶಿ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಟೇಕ್ಸ್ ಬಾಲಮಂದಿರ್ ಕ್ಲಾಸಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಹೆಲ್ಪ್ಸ್ ಸ್ಟೂಡೆಂಟ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡರ್ಡ್ 10th ಇನ್ ಮ್ಯಾಥ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಸೈನ್ಸ್ ಆ್ಯಟ್ ನಿವೇದಿತ ವಿದ್ಯಾಪೀಠ ಶ್ರೀ ಶಾರದಾ ಮಠ್ ಓವರ್ ದ ವೀಕೆಂಡ್ಸ್. ಹರ್ ಇಂಟ್ರಡಕ್ಷನ್ ಟು ದಿ ಹೋಲಿ ಟ್ರಿಯೋ ವಾಸ್ ಇನ್ ಹರ್ ಚೈಲ್ಡ್ಹುಡ್ ಥ್ರೂ ಹರ್ ಮದರ್, ಬಟ್ ಇಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಮಚ್ ಲೇಟರ್ ದಟ್ ಶಿ ರಿಯಲೈಸ್ಡ್ ದ ಪ್ರೆಸೆನ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಮಕೃಷ್ಣ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಹೋಲಿ ಮದರ್ ಇನ್ ಹರ್ ಲೈಫ್. ಇನ್ ಹರ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೋರೇಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ಸ್ವಾಮೀಜಿಸ್ ಟೀಚಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಶಿ ಫೈಂಡ್ಸ್ ಇಮ್ಮೆನ್ಸ್ ಸ್ಟ್ರೆಂಗ್ತ್ ಹಿಡನ್ ಇನ್ ಇಟ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ವಿಲ್ ಶೇರ್ ಸಮ್ ಆಫ್ ಇಟ್ ವಿತ್ ಯು ಆಲ್ ಟುಡೇ. ಐ ವಿಲ್ ರಿಕ್ವೆಸ್ಟ್ ಸಿಂಧು ಟು ಟಾಕ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಸ್ವಾಮೀಜಿ.
ಜನನೀಂ ಶಾರದಾಂ ದೇವೀಂ ರಾಮಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ಜಗದ್ಗುರುಂ ಪಾದಪದ್ಮೇ ತ್ವಯೋ ಶ್ರಿತ್ವಾ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಮುಹುರ್ಮುಹುಃ. ನಮಃ ಶ್ರೀ ಯತಿರಾಜಾಯ ವಿವೇಕಾನಂದ ಸೂರಯೇತ್ ಸಚ್ಚಿತ್ ಸುಖ ಸ್ವರೂಪಾಯ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನೇ ತಾಪಹಾರಿಣಿ. ಅ ವೆರಿ ಗುಡ್ ಮಾರ್ನಿಂಗ್ ಟು ಎವ್ರಿ ಒನ್ ಗ್ಯಾದರ್ಡ್ ಹಿಯರ್. ಇಟ್ ಈಸ್ ಇಂಡೀಡ್ ಅ ಬ್ಲೆಸ್ಸಿಂಗ್ ಟು ಸ್ಪೀಕ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ಹೋಲಿ ಶ್ರೈನ್ and I would like to convey my very sincere gratitude to Shri Sharda Math for giving me this opportunity to just meditate and think a little bit about Swamiji on this very sacred day. So when Mataji called me and said, will you speak on Swamiji, and I immediately said, okay, yes Mataji, definitely, it's such a great opportunity. And a few days later I thought, what have I accepted? It is such a mammoth task that probably one lifetime is not enough to understand Swamiji. So I started looking into deeply into his teachings once again, and one thing really struck me is that especially when we come to his lectures in the US or the practical Vedanta that he talks about, he keeps telling about the divinity of the soul. The soul is divine, or religion is the manifestation of your divinity. And generally we read it just like that, yes, okay, one day we'll come to it, maybe one day we will understand. But it is such a recurring topic and recurring theme in what he says. It seemed to me that he is indicating something very important to us. We need to pay attention to this because everywhere it is there. So today's attempt is that we all would meditate probably on one teaching of Swamiji. Basically, to discuss or understand Swamiji is to take a whole ocean and put it in a small teacup. So at least in our own capacities, let us try to look at this one teaching which he gives, which is every soul is potentially divine, and the goal is to manifest this divinity. How? By controlling our nature, both internal and external nature. And how do we do that? Through the four yogas, by worship or work, psychic control or philosophy, one or everything, right? And what do we get out of this is that we get to be free. And he says, this is religion and everything else is secondary. In today's day and time, when we are so confused about what is religion, people around us say one thing, the youngsters are extremely confused, If you have talked to youngsters in your life, I'm going to take the liberty of saying that, and you ask them, do you believe in God? They will give you one of the three answers. One is yes. One is, oh, I don't know what is God, but there is some higher power. And the third answer is very common. I am spiritual, but not religious. Right? So this goes to say that we understand neither spirituality nor religion. And Swamiji had the foresight to give us this teaching one century ago, that what is religion is to manifest the divinity of the soul and nothing else. So let us look into this, and to understand these very big words, there are so many big words with big ideas. Let us take his own life and, you know, let us try to understand his life as a sadhaka that he portrays to us. Probably that is one of the few relatable parts of Swamiji which we can see in our own lives. And, you know, when they live practically is when we can understand, okay, this is something that I can take into my life and do it. So understanding the practical applications of this also is very important. And in this day especially, the world is changing so rapidly. I think we can all feel it, especially post-COVID. It is just changing at such a pace that it's hard to keep up. There is misinformation, there is disinformation. We don't know what to believe. Our very core is kind of confused. So this helps us center ourselves. It gives us a center, and it demands us to sharpen our intellect and expand our hearts and move forward on the right path. So let us make this very small attempt to meditate on Swamiji today. Today is his 162nd birthday, and he was born on 12th of January 1863, which we all know, on the auspicious day of Makar Sankranti. Now, let us just take a small glimpse of how his childhood was and how he developed during that time, right? His parents, of course, we all know what an influence his parents had on him. He was born, his father was Vishwanath Datta, a very famous lawyer, right from Lahore to Lucknow to Calcutta. So he was a very well-known, generous man also. And we also know that how Swamiji was so influenced by this generosity of Vishwanath Datta. And nobody would be sent empty-handed from the Datta household, right? And because Vishwanath Datta was such an influential man at that time, there were people of all kinds of all statures who would come and visit the household. So Naren, let us refer to Swamiji as Naren during his childhood, also had that exposure right in the beginning to meet elevated minds, to be able to interact with them and have very high level of thinking at such a young age. So that was a brilliant exposure that he had. And his mother was Bhuvaneshwari Devi. She was a very pious woman, we all know that. You know, it was her desire to have a son that she prayed to Lord Shiva, and Naren was born as a result as the third child to Vishwanath Datta and Bhuvaneshwari Devi. She was so instrumental in the spiritual culturing of Naren. So she would read out the Ramayana to him, Mahabharata to him, and tell all the stories of gods, goddesses, and you know those stories that we are also familiar with from our childhood. So all this even Naren learnt from his mother. And they also used to have these katha part, which I think until few years ago, even it was a part of our lives also, where groups of people would gather together to reflect on the holy teachings. So he was also a very good part of that. Now, this was his influence that his parents had on him. Now, he had a very, very colorful life. He had so many different types of pets which we could not even think of maybe. He had a monkey, he had a peacock, then he had a goat, he also had a cow. He loved that cow so much, he would go talk so sweetly to it. So he had a beautiful relationship with his pets also. And we all know how much energy he had. He was restless. The vitality in him, even at that time, was bubbling so much that he would participate in all the activities. He was so good at sports. We all know how much he used to like keeping physical strength. He would go to the gym, or rather that small makeshift gym what they used to have. He was very good at lathi play, that you know, where they compete with the sticks. So he was a master at that and many other activities. Basically, he was never a lazy child, always busy. And, you know, so this was, and on the intellectual side, he would grasp everything just like that. He was sent to school, but he fell into bad company apparently, and he was immediately taken out and homeschooled. Even there, the teacher had a hard time keeping up with Naren's grasping abilities. And this exposure that he had with his father's colleagues also helped him develop intellectually throughout the college years also. He had a very keen interest in Western philosophy, and he would go through it and he would question everything that he saw. That was one trademark of Naren that we can see from his childhood. He would question. Okay? And on his spiritual life, I think this is something that we all know very well, how well he used to meditate on Lord Shiva, that he would lose outer consciousness completely. Nobody could come wake him up very easily. And the other thing was, when he would sleep, he would see a light and he would think that is how everybody went to sleep. In fact, it was only when Sri Ramakrishna asked him, "Do you see a light when you sleep?" is when he said yes. And Sri Ramakrishna remarked to the others that that is the mark of a perfect born. Then there was another incident where Naren was meditating one day and he saw a luminous figure just come straight out of the wall into his room. He kept looking at the figure, and after a while suddenly he was just very scared and he took away his attention, and then the figure just disappeared. Much later in his life, he found out it was Lord Buddha who had appeared to him. And then his love for nature. Like we have heard Sri Ramakrishna, how once when he was young, he saw some cranes passing in the sky. Immediately his mind got so elevated that he went into samadhi. Even Naren had such an incident. His father was transferred to Raipur, and little Naren was given the responsibility of bringing his whole family to Raipur. So you can imagine how responsibly he would have done that. And they were crossing this stretch of the Vindhyas that time, and full thick forest, beautiful trees, the sky was bright, and suddenly Naren just saw, something just took his imagination, and he observed how the mountains were coming together and how the clouds were, and he saw a honeybee there which was building in one of the trees, and his mind was so elevated that he lost consciousness, and he has no recollection of how long he was there, but this gives a glimpse of, at that age, the elevated mind of Naren, as we know it. Now we know that, you know, so many things are similar yet so different when we look at our own lives in the light of his childhood itself. So how did this soul that was Naren become divine? So now let us look at the second part, which is the goal is to manifest this divinity by controlling nature, internal and external. Big words. Goal, divinity, we control nature. So first, let us understand divinity. We take it for granted that divine is some very vague concept that we have in our mind, divine. All of us have our own concepts. Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita gives us 26 qualities of what is divinity. And he just breaks it down. Like, this is the beauty of, I feel, about Indian scriptures. They, you know, instead of giving a chakli for us to, like, you know, bite and grind, they make their pieces and give it to us and say, have, you know, enjoy the piece. But whether we take it is another thing. So, those, if you want to refer, it is in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 1 to 6, where 26 virtues are given. Out of them, I'll just read out a few of them. First one, fearlessness, purity of mind, devotion to God, steadfast in spiritual knowledge, restraint from fault finding, mother's favorite teaching, truthfulness, compassion towards all living beings. We'll just take a few of this, and we see that this is very common across the lives of Sri Ramakrishna, Swamiji, and mother. Now, we heard some beautiful bhajans this morning, and there was again a recurring theme. Arivada dhairya, we cannot understand his fearlessness. Dhairya, virata, everything kept repeating in your bhajans, right? which shows that the external hallmark of Swamiji itself was fearlessness. The very way Swamiji stands exudes fearlessness, isn't it? We also feel, yes, what a bold, brave figure that we are looking at. Fearlessness was one important aspect of Swamiji that he also asked all of us to have. Now, it's a very big word, fearlessness. What is fear? I think fear is something that we are all able to commonly relate, because in some way or the other, we have something. Fear of the future, fear of being in conflict with somebody, fear of somebody telling something to us and we are not ready to accept that. There are multiple types of this fear, isn't it? But we feel it very deeply. Some we share, some is very, very inherent in us. What does this make us? It is basically we have walked into a cage and closed the cage ourselves, and we want to live in this small trap forever. And we believe that this is who we are. This is it. This is our limited self. How limited the infinite mind has become, because we have chosen to draw fences around it. And Swamiji says, any kind of contraction is death. What a big statement to say. Death of what? Death of possibilities, death of growth, or probably even the extent to which we can grow in our own life, which has been given for sadhana. Is that fair? Is the question that we need to ask ourselves. And what is the antidote for this? He says, expansion is life. Expand yourselves. Let us push the boundaries of every single thing that we have put a fence on and say, okay, I will push this boundary and see what happens. Let me experiment with my own life and see, is the result favorable? And move on from there. So in small ways, Swamiji gives us great vigor to expand ourselves. And with the underlying theme of love, with love let us do, with positivity go ahead. In today's neuroscience very much accepts what Swamiji is saying. In fact, recently there has been a research which says there is a part in our brain called the anterior cingulate cortex, okay? And that is very important for the regulation of our attention, memory and all. And they said people who do what they do not want to do, right? People who do what they don't want to do, for them this part of the brain expands significantly. And when it expands, your quality of life and the satisfaction of life itself increases tremendously. And those who do not do, who live in their comfort zone, they found that this portion became so reduced that it deteriorated and affected the quality of their life, their cognition and everything. And these people were just really unhappy. This is what research says today. So what is stopping us is something that we need to ask ourselves. Now, yes, fearlessness. There are two ways. Some people are so fearless to do the wrong thing. They, corrupt people who are into corruption or whatever it is, right? There is one type of fearlessness. Then there is another type of fearlessness, which is doing the right thing. So is fearlessness just able to stand on itself? When we look deeply, it stands on the giant shoulders of purity, shuddhi, sattva shuddhi, purity of mind, right? Even Naren, if we look, before we go into purity, if we look into some of his own stories, we will understand how in his life he has shown different types of fearlessness. Okay, let us just quickly look at that to understand how it stands on purity. In his childhood, there was once a carnival and everyone was very happy because in those days there were hardly any entertainment. So he also went and there was this lathi khel, a stick player tournament happening. He was also watching. I think he was too young, so he could not enroll, else he would probably have enrolled. And at the end of the tournament, the champion was declared. But Naren, suddenly from the audience, they heard a child's voice saying, if you dare, I challenge you to fight against, to play against me. Now the audience, as usual, they would say, oh, he's just but a child, what would he know? You know, they took sympathy on the child, thinking it's just childishness. So the organizers said, yes, come, okay, you get a chance to play against this champion. Naren went down to the stadium, and within few minutes, he defeated the champion. And that was one of the incidents. And the second one is, a very interesting story where, yes, his restlessness took him to many kinds of games. One of the things was his friend had a tree, Champaka tree, and he would climb up that and he would really enjoy climbing that tree and playing there. Now there was a grandfather in that house, and the grandfather was like, okay, this guy is going to go up and all my puja flowers are going to get ruined, and so I should stop Naren somehow. So he told him this scary story that, listen, there is a Brahma Daitya that lives on that tree. Now if you go up, that Brahma Daitya is going to take you and break your neck. Now what would happen to you then? So Naren, out of respect for the grandfather, came down and he was like, yeah, okay, fine. And the moment the grandfather left, Naren quickly went up the tree. And just below, the friend is like, did you not hear what the grandfather said? There's going to be a Brahma Daitya, your neck is going to go. And Naren said, if there was a Brahma Daitya, my neck would have gone long back. Why would he have waited till the grandfather told him? Now look at this self-belief that Naren had in his own intellect, in his own experiences, that whatever the mob told or somebody else told him, he would not take it just like that. That is the difference between probably a lot of us as sadhakas and him, that he believed in his own self, in his own experience, in his own intellect. Secondly, now this fearless attitude, in fact, is what brought him to the feet of the master. If he had just accepted what people told him or what the tradition told him, maybe he would have not come to Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna at all. There was a time in his life when he started wanting to know God. I'm sure we all know about that incident very well. He would go and ask a lot of these masters of philosophy, have you seen God, have you seen God? But it was his professor of Western philosophy, Professor Hasty, who gave him a small indication as to, there is a person in Dakshineshwar, Sri Ramakrishna. He is the one I have seen who has gone to trance many times. If there is one who understands what God is, probably that could be him. I am paraphrasing a little bit here, but you get the gist. So Narendra remembered this and he went to Sri Ramakrishna. And the rest we know as how he transformed. But even with Sri Ramakrishna, he gave a very hard time. He questioned and scrutinized every statement of what Thakur said until it became so internal to him that he had the realization of it. So Sri Ramakrishna wanted to give him the path of teach him Advaita Vedanta. And we know that very famous story where Swamiji comes out one day and says, what, God is here, God is there, what is Sri Ramakrishna saying? And the very moment he comes out and touches his forehead and gives him the experience of that oneness, underlying consciousness. So just that fearless scrutiny, irrespective of what it is, until his intellect was satisfied, is what brought him to that realization, the goal of realizing his own divinity. And now this control of external nature, external and internal, one is what he controlled his fear. Control is not pushing something down, but having it in your hand. You decide how do you want to use it. Like how you kind of direct the horses, you're the one. It's in your hands and you get to choose how you want to exercise it. That would be control. Control of nature. What is nature? Habits. Our own habits, our own samskaras. That is our nature, isn't it? And this fearlessness stands on incredible purity. We all know Sri Ramakrishna stressed so much on that. In fact, that was the reason why he loved Naren so much also, and he accepted Naren because of his purity. And Swamiji was also stressed so much on purity. This came from when they talked to his college friends. They said, he was so pure that spirituality would just radiate from his heart. People around him would feel elevated. I think you would also have experienced if you met, realized people or went to some very holy places, you get that feeling of something in you which just silences your mind, and that would be the power of purity. In fact, he was made fun of. In college days, that is the attitude of youngsters. People want to, experience things, but Swamiji never compromised on his values, and that is a big never compromised. And now to understand purity, again, he does such a great favor, because we have to understand these big words. We understand external purity, hygiene, yes. Now, he says, go to the mental level. Mental level, is purity as a virtue, it is not a resistance to any kind of evil, but an overwhelming passion to do good. And that is purity. In one sentence, he removes any kind of conflict. Should I do this? Should I do that? What should I do? Is this the right thing? No resistance to any kind of thought. Just single thought. Passion to do good and an overwhelming passion to do good. Doesn't that become so crystal clear that we can just make it as a single pointed sadhana and move on in our lives? This is the beauty that I think this is Swamiji's compassion for the people to follow, and that he has made spirituality so easy for us. And, you know, this helps us remove all kinds of purity that is dictated by society or moral superior, anything that is, and focus only on good thoughts, positive thoughts. There's another thing he says, have faith in every person, even the most downtrodden, have faith in them. Have faith in yourself, because you never know tomorrow what they can become. In fact, coming back to neuroscience, there is a research where, when we are very stressed, you can feel the stress, and people around you also can feel the stress. Have you noticed? When someone is stressed in the house, everyone feels that stress. And the research has shown that there is a hormone called cortisol, okay? And when that is secreted in your body, it seeps through your skin to around 6 inches away from you. So people around you are also able to catch that the effect of that cortisol from your body. So mental health, the mind is like taking care of it, is taking care of so others also. So when we want to follow, have faith in others, have overwhelming passion to do good, we are helping people around us also by removing all kinds of negativity in us. So it is such a beautiful thing that he explains to us, right? And then he says, that change yourself and the world will change, which is basically this, change ourselves, have good thoughts and the world will change. And the last quality that I want to talk about right now is satya. Satya is the hallmark of Sri Ramakrishna. He says that is the sadhana for Kali Yuga, no second thought about it. When we want to do sadhana, just focus on satya. We had an annual day event recently in Nivedita Vidyapeeth, and the chief guest said a very beautiful thought, which I would like to share with all of you. So we were talking about not finding fault with others. Now, how to do this sadhana? We all do japa 108 times in a day, right? How about we try to do even this? We try to speak the truth 108 times in a day, rather. Whenever we want to say something which is false, we hold ourselves back at least for 108 times. Does that not become a beautiful sadhana in itself? Every day we try until it becomes our nature, our habit. Right? What a beautiful thought that Swamiji shares with us. And the moment we start speaking satya, we also go deeply and stop finding fault with others. There is enough work for us to do ourselves. Okay? So now coming to this, now he has given, this is like open book exam basically. Swamiji has given the question, given the answer, now we have to write the answer in the paper, that is it, isn't it? Now how do we achieve this? It's through the four yogas, a topic very close to my heart. And I'm sure all of you are aware of these, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Raja Yoga. Now these, in traditional classical yoga, Karma Yoga was seen as a purificatory practice, right? In the Bhagavad Gita especially, you need to do karma without any kind of nishkama karma, basically, to purify your mind for the higher yogas. Again, Swamiji comes and changes the definition and said, you can realize God through Karma Yoga itself. And what a great contribution he has made to our own lives. And that too, not with the bhav that I am helping somebody, but I am trying to see God in every being that I am looking at. And by helping that soul, I am serving God itself. Shiva Jnana Jiva Seve or Atmano Mokshartham Jagat Hitayacha. He gives such a beautiful explanation of Karma Yoga, which is so simple for all of us to follow. And then he talks about Raja Yoga. Now, the monkey mind has to be controlled in our lives. Otherwise, there is no moving forward, right? In Raja Yoga, we talk about Chitta Vritti. That is The vrittis have to be removed, isn't it? Nirodaha. And what happens is, tada drashtuhu swarupe avasthanam. You come to know your own swarupa, which is you come to know your own divinity, is paraphrasing what Swamiji is saying, in fact. Right? So, even in this, there is, yes, how do we do this is paying attention. I think we all know how much Swamiji talked about the importance of concentration and meditation. Two things, again, which are the theme of his talks everywhere. But a simple way to understand that is to pay attention. To pay attention to the work we do. To pay attention to what we are thinking. Now, if you have a piece of land and you want to sell it, you would call, would you accept that land rate for anything which is not the actual value of the land? Never, right? We would have first opinion, second opinion, we would call up a lawyer, and if somebody threw garbage, immediately we would come and put a fence and make sure that land is protected. Then we need to think, this is exactly like our attention. Attention is the most inherent thing to us and is the most precious to us. It is so precious that is the training of attention is what we are trying to get at through Karma Yoga and Raja Yoga. Attention to what? Attention to God or attention to our own divinity. If we are so careless about our attention, in fact, today, everything, our phones, the internet runs, it's called what is called attention economy. People are making money out of your attention. Now, if we are so careful with something like land, which anyway tomorrow you can lose it, tomorrow we could go away and it doesn't mean anything anymore, then why are we so careless with our attention? It's something we have to really ponder about. It is just, is it that free? It's something that you should think and decide for yourself, because that is the only thing that is so innate to us, which reflects our consciousness. And then we go to Bhakti Yoga, which today I read a very beautiful quote, and I would like to share that with you, which Swamiji says. And I think this will encapsulate. There is a proverb in India, if I want to be a hunter, I'll hunt a rhinoceros. If I want to be a robber, I'll rob the king's treasury. What is the use of robbing beggars or hunting ants? So, if you want to love, love God. What a beautiful thought. Always reach the highest. Don't look at anything, pay attention to nothing smaller than what is the highest. And that just encapsulates Bhakti Yoga. And moving ahead, which is Jnana Yoga. Now these things, the moment we start paying attention, it gives us Jnana. It is not something so external. Those of you who probably went, you know, all of us, when we started cooking for the first time, we would ask our mothers how to make dal or rasam, and we would want exact measurements. Okay, for this one cup, how many cups of water should I put? How many exact teaspoons of, chili I should put? But the mothers would always give very disappointing answers. Just see and put whatever you like, andajal haak bidi. And the children so disappointed, okay, this is going to turn out so bad, we don't know. But the point there is, through repeated action and paying attention to that cooking, they have an innate knowledge of what will turn out well if I put what and how and in which heat. That knowledge is inherent to them. And similarly for every other activity. The moment we pay attention to it, we get Jnana. We get knowledge of that, which nobody can take away from us. It is our treasure. And slowly, through purity, through the practice of truth, through the practice which will bring fearlessness, we get a glimpse of what is Brahman, which the attributes, again, Brahman, big word. So let's break it down into attributes. Nitya, Shuddha, Buddha, Mukta. Shuddha itself, again, the preliminary practice, the sadhanatta chatushtaya, the yama niyama, basic, is reflects Brahman. Buddha, automatically we become knowledgeable. And last, what Swamiji says, if we follow this, we become free. Again, this is a question we need to ask ourselves. Do we really want to be free? We all want freedom in our own terms. And freedom from that, this. In our limited mind space, we want freedom. But the deeper question is, can we imagine what is absolute freedom? Imagine your thoughts are not with you. Imagine they don't be, like we have to imagine only because we are not there. We are not able to relate. We feel outside of the world, and I'm sorry, I don't have the words to explain because even I do not know, but what would absolute freedom look like? Definitely not the one that we are asking for. In pre-classical yoga, before Patanjali, yogis used to be called dhiras, people who are very brave. Because to want this freedom, we need to be very brave to let go of what we already know, expand ourselves to what is the attribute of Brahman. Now the journey sounds very long, it sounds very rough, and there are many times as sadhakas in our life, we feel very dry. We think, what are we doing? What is happening? I'm feeling, you know, I'm doing something but nothing is happening. There are many of these thoughts. Naren also felt that. Swamiji felt that quite a few times also. And he answers this in a beautiful way, in a nutshell. How do we keep going? The master's love, one and only. He says there were so many times when he could not understand Sri Ramakrishna that he just wanted to be away from him. But something just held him, as it were. It just kept him there. And later he realized that it was not his love that bound him to the master, but the master's love that bound him to master. And I think it is the same for all of us. It is their love which keeps us going. We think, oh, we love Ma, we love Thakur, we love Swamiji, but they love us much more than we can ever, ever, ever imagine, I think. And keeping this thought and placing deep Shraddha in Swamiji's teachings, let us just close our eyes and meditate on one small quote of Swamiji. Let us place Shraddha in his words that Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Sri Ma and Swamiji are holding us always, and we are bound to them. So let us meditate on, all power is within you. You can do anything and everything. Believe in that. Do not believe you're weak. All power is there. Stand up and express that divinity within you. I pray that we all realize Swamiji's teachings with the blessing of Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Sri Ma and Swamiji. And with that, I would like to conclude my sharing for today. Hari Om, Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.